Hello, my name is Mountain Maze. I am a fifth generation Carbondalian, and today I will be interviewing my great-grandfather Bob, who is 89 years old, a fabulous storyteller, a Korean War veteran, and a 50-plus year Carbondale resident. He is also a former Redstone coal miner. Papa, can you please give us your full name and where you were born?
My name is Robert E. Fadley, F-A-D-E-L-Y. And I was born in Denver General Hospital in Denver, Colorado.
And what were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Pearl and my dad's name was Dale.
Where did your family immigrate from?
My mother's family all came from Germany in the late 1800s. They were mostly there. They were farmers, and I think they were here looking for a better life.
Can you tell us about your grandparents and extended family?
Well, they were, when they finally got here, they raised six children. My mother was the youngest one. They landed in New York, of course, and they made their way to Nebraska. And that's when they decided that that's where they wanted to start farming.
And what was school like for you growing up in Nebraska?
Well, we were about a mile from the school to our house, and in the summer I walked, and a lot of times in the winter my dad would take me to school. There were probably maybe 8-10 children in all in the school.
What do you remember about the Dust Bowl?
Yes, I do. I remember that in the late 1930s I was probably 10, 8, 10, 11 years old. And the people were coming out of Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and even eastern Nebraska. And it was a terrible drought, 7-year drought. All the topsoil had been moving, taken, and consequently the dust was like powdered sugar. And these people would stop by our house and ask if we could spare some food. And my grandmother would get them a basket of vegetables out of her garden, and they'd let the kids go out and pick apples out of the apple orchard in order for them to make it, because they were hungry. Mm-hmm. And they were all headed west towards, I suppose, Denver and parts west.
Could you tell us a little bit about your mother, Pearl?
Well, she was pretty tough. We were in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and we were all fishing the Jenny Lake, which is in the Yellowstone Park. And I was standing maybe 50 yards from my mom, and my dad was down maybe another 100 yards from me. And off her left was another man fishing, and he was about 20 yards from her. And the fishing was excellent. It was very good fishing. And the man on her left hollered over to my mom and said, "Who's your friend, lady?" And what it was is my mom had a basket-type creel, and she had several fish in her creel. And a huge grizzly bear was standing beside her smelling her creel. And she turned and looked at him and just said, "You better be on your way, big boy." And believe it or not, that bear turned around and walked off. And it scared my mom to death, but it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, she was very tough to do that. You were a teenager during World War II, and your family were German immigrants. This must have created an interesting situation with your family at your home.
The biggest situation I remember was they were all German Lutherans, and they all the people around where they had settled there in Nebraska were of course all German immigrants, and the Lutheran church was German Lutheran, and they all spoke German in the services at the church. And I vaguely remember when President Roosevelt declared war on Japan and Germany at the beginning of the Second World War. That was when, the following Sunday, we were notified that after today, there will be no more services in German. They'll all be in English because of the situation of the war in Europe.
Do you remember your first visit to a big city?
Yes, I do. I didn't like it. I'm not crazy about big cities even today.
Papa, when you were a young man and you decided to hit the road for an adventure away from home and you ended up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, could you tell us about this adventure?
When I graduated from high school in 1947, I decided I wanted to get away from home, get out of Denver. We were in Denver at the time. I wanted to get out of Denver and I wanted to be someplace else. I always had a great love for Jackson Hole and the Teton Mountains. So I saved up some money and I bought a bus ticket and I told the bus driver I wanted to go to a place where the Tetons were because I couldn't remember the name of Jackson Hole. And he gave me a ticket to go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I spent almost 3 years in Jackson Hole and then I finally returned home.
As a young man, you entered the U.S. Army. Where were you assigned?
I was drafted right there in Denver in 1949. It was a selective service type thing, and I was required by the United States government to be in the Army for at least 2 years.
Wow, that is cool.
My papa then served two tours of duty in the Korean War as a combat veteran. He was awarded a Purple Heart for being injured in combat, along with numerous other decorations. The war was a tough time for papa, and it is hard for him to talk about. The memories of fallen friends and horrific times weigh heavy on his mind even 60 years later. He and his fellow soldiers were ambitious young men and true patriots. They cannot be forgotten as they fought for the love of their country and their own lives. Although the war was a tough time for my papa, it was an important time for him as he met the lovely bride of 67 years, Elsie Derby. Papa, can you tell us about the first time you met Granny?
There was a place on East Colfax called the East Pick-a-Rib, and it was a drive-in where the girls would come out and wait on you, and then they'd bring out the trays of food. And I was riding a motorcycle at the time, and I remember when Elsie Derby walked out, and I knew immediately that she was the one. I just knew she was. And she'd come out with my order of hamburgers and Cokes or French fries or whatever and hang the tray on the handlebars of my motorcycle. I tried many times to get her to let me take her home, but she wouldn't do it because she'd promised her parents that she wouldn't ride home with anybody but the people that brought her to work. Finally, I did get her to ride home with me.
That must have been exciting. How long did you two date before you asked her to marry you?
Well, it wasn't long because we were running out of time because I was looking to be in the service very soon. Once I got to know her and knew that she was the one that I wanted to spend my life with, I asked her very soon if she would marry me, and she said she would.
What was it like leaving a young bride at home and having to go to war?
Well, we weren't married when I first went to Korea. But she promised that she'd wait for me, and she did. So, and she wrote to me almost every day while I was overseas. Of course, getting mail during a war is not easy, but sometimes I'd get a whole stack of mail from her.
Where were you living when you returned from war?
Once we got married, then we rented a little apartment on 16th and Downing in the eastern part of Denver.
What was your occupation after you returned home from the war?
Well, I'd done a lot of things. I drove a Budweiser beer truck. I drove a cement mixer truck. I worked in a sheet metal factory.
I never knew all of this.
but my love was house painting. And once I joined the union as house painters, that was what I knew. That's what I wanted to do the rest of my life.
What was it like when you returned home? Had anything changed?
lots of things. Of course, I was 3 years older. My beautiful bride was also 3 years older. She was staying with her parents when I got home, and then we moved into this small apartment. Of course, Denver was growing by leaps and bounds. The building, the work and the buildings and everything, it was just amazing how much work there was in Denver because everything was growing so fast.
Papa, how many children did you and Granny have, and what were their names?
We had three kids. My oldest daughter is named Terry. She lives here in Carbondale. My middle is my son, and his name is Rick, and he lives in Florida. And my youngest girl is named Wendy, and she lives in Phoenix, Arizona.
Can you tell us about the first time you heard about Pizza Hut and when you first tried it? Kind of an odd question, but good story.
My wife wrote me a letter, and she had some friends here in Denver, and she told me about this new thing they had here in Denver. It was called pizza. I had no idea what it was. And when I got home, of course, I liked it.
Had to try it, yeah. How and when did you end up in the Roaringfork Valley?
We weren't really happy about living in the city. It was growing too fast. And of course, it's nothing like now, but even then. And we were country folks. We weren't really city folks. And so my mother had a small home over here in Carbondale. And so we come over to visit, fell in love with the place, and it was a very short time after that we moved here to Carbondale.
And what was Carbondale like when you first moved here?
Very small, very, very small. One main street, one filling station, one post office, one grocery store, and some other buildings, but there wasn't much here at that time.
Where did you live when you first came to town?
We lived 1 year east of town, or I'm sorry, south of town, on the main ranch house at Four Bars Ranch.
Can you tell us about your first property you purchased in Carbondale?
We bought two lots on 7th and Euclid. We moved a 24-by-65 mobile home onto these two lots, pretty much where we set up housekeeping.
How would you describe Carbondale downtown when you came to town?
Well, there again, it was very small. People were very, very friendly. You can't beat the people in Carbondale. They're the greatest. It seemed like we fit right in the minute we moved in here.
Can you tell us about the community of Carbondale at that time?
There was not a whole lot going on. When people come to Carbondale, they like it and they want to stay, so.
What are some memories you have from the first time you moved to Carbondale?
Well, I remember Highway 82 to Aspen was a two-lane. I remember the bridge where the concrete bridge is now between 82 and 133 is above the river before you drop down onto the bottom of the river, to the bottom of where the river was. And there was a steel bridge there, and then you come up over on the other side to get to 82.
What was your line of work in the Roaring Fork Valley throughout your working years?
My main vocation was house painting. It's something that I loved and something that I was, without bragging, was very good at. And it was something that was in demand here because this part of the country from Aspen clear down to Rifle was growing, so there was plenty of work.
Can you tell us about your time mining up at Coal Basin in Redstone?
I was at Mid-Continent. I was an underground coal miner for 16 years at Mid-Continent. They finally went broke in 1986, so I had to turn back to painting. It was something that I enjoyed. It was quite an experience to be in a dark coal mine where you never knew whether it was daytime or nighttime or what time it was.
Where were you when there was a horrible explosion at the mine that killed so many of the workers that lived in Carbondale?
Actually, there were two explosions in my time there in the 16 years that I was there. Both times, I worked a lot of graveyard, and that was from 11 at night till 8 in the morning. So I was on graveyard, and I did call and ask if they needed help, but they had plenty of help getting things cleaned up.
Did this accident change your outlook on your dangerous occupation?
No, not really. When you get to be an experienced miner, the mine talks to you. It tells you pretty much what it's going to do. There's a lot of pressure down there, but things happen that they make different noises, and you get to the point where you understand pretty much what's going on, and it's really not that bad.
How has Carbondale changed from the small town you once knew?
Oh boy, has it ever changed. It's amazing how it's grown. It's amazing the improvements in just a matter of a short time. And the buildings went up and the people moved in, and it just grew and grew and grew. It's amazing.
Was Carbondale a good place to raise your family?
The best place there was.
We will be back after a short music break and hear more from my papa about the early days of Mountain Fair.
Way down. Up lays the river where the old mill runs. Meet the lazy river with the noonday sun. Linger in the shade of a kind old tree. Throw away your trouble, dream a dream of me, dream a dream of me. Up the lazy river where the robin's on. Wakes to bright new morning as we loaf along. Blue skies up above, everyone in love. Off the lazy river, how happy we will be. Mama, mama. Oh, up the lazy river, up the lazy river. Every day they live and put me hardy. And the lady be there, my long life. And the daughter, you did, but didn't, oh, be better. Do did that in the day, and let
the oh, you dog. Boy, if I ain't ripping this evening, I hope something.
Oh, hey, of the lazy river. River. Oh, you river.
Oh, you dog.
Oh, you river.
Look out there, tall Alexander. Swing out there on them irons there, boy.
My name is Mountain Maze, and I'm talking to my great-grandfather Bob, who to me is Papa.
Carbondale's annual Mountain Fair is just around the corner and right across the street from where you live. Over the weekend on July 28th, 29th, and the 30th, downtown Carbondale at the Sobers Park. Carbondale will be celebrating its 45th Mountain Fair. So Papa, what do you remember about the first Mountain Fair in Carbondale?
It's very small. Lots of hippies, which was a novelty for us because we didn't have many hippies here in Carbondale. They all come down from the lake up at the base of Mount Sopris. That's where most of them live during the summer months. The first Mountain Fair was, there was no booths. The hippies put their sleeping bags down and put their wares on their sleeping bags, and you could walk through the park and That was about it.
How many people would you estimate first attended?
Oh, not counting the hippies, I would say maybe 100 locals. That would be about all.
And then what? How about counting the hippies?
Oh, everybody's so darn friendly when we first moved to Carbondale. So the people here were great. The hippies were great. I mean, their philosophy was love, and they were easy to get along with. There was never any problem with them. I do want to point out that on the second mountain fair, I got up on a Saturday morning and looked out my front room window, and there was two backpacker tents in my front yard. And I got out and went to the gate, and when I did, one of them crawled out of his tent, and I was sure he was terrified that I was going to really get upset. But he started apologizing. I told him, no problem. And he said, well, it was dark when they got into town. There was no place to camp over at the park, so they would be okay if they camped here. I said it was okay. I also told them, do not drink the water out of the ditch. Drink the water out of the faucet at my house. And that was the second mountain fair.
So was there music, dancing, no fenders? How was it set up?
Well, most of the hippie kids, most of them were, I'd say, maybe college age, some of them a little older. And they just come in, sat down, rolled out their sleeping bags, and put their goods on there. And that's what they sold. Of course, they had their own kind of music, which wasn't our cup of tea, but it was their kind of music. And they did dance and have a good time. They drank a little wine. I'm pretty sure they smoked a little pot. In those days, of course, it was illegal. But there was no booths, the first and second, even maybe the third one, until it began to grow. But the first two or three was very small. They used our alley for a bathroom, and so it was pretty small, and it was pretty cool.
How has Mountain Fair changed since the early and original festival?
Well, from 100, the first one, maybe to 3,000 or 4,000 people now. They have a whole battery of outdoor toilets, so we don't have to worry about the alley anymore. They do a lot of dancing, a lot of good music, and we get in on all of it, and we've never had a problem with anyone, never, ever.
Have you enjoyed living right by all the action?
Yeah, we have. We always get together with a lot of our family. They can come over here to our patio, and then if they want to go over to the fair and walk through, check it out, why they can do that, then they can come back over here. We always have good food here. Some of the guys drink a little beer. It's really cool the way it works out for us.
Are there any interesting or favorite stories you would like to share with us today?
Well, I don't know. I got 1,000 of them. I told you about my mother, and that was quite an experience. I do remember there was a bear problem. We come out one morning, and we've never had any bear problems here. But we come out one morning to go to town, I guess, on a Saturday morning, and our trash was strung all over the alley. So right away, I thought a dog. Granny and I, we picked up the trash and put it in the trash can and cleaned up the mess the best we could. And I happened to look down, and there was some fresh dirt right there by my shed, and there was this huge bear footprint, so it was not a dog that got into our trash. It was definitely a bear. The only time since we've lived here that we had ever had a bear that close to our house.
And any other stories you got?
That's about it.
Well, Papa, I have one more question for you as we wrap this up. You've been happily married for 64 years to the woman you have always cherished and loved. Your relationship with Granny is timeless and full of love, and even today it seems like the two of you are happier than ever. Can you give us, the young couples, the secret of timeless love?
Yes, I can. First and foremost, never go to bed mad at one another. Never. Secondly, never be too proud to say, I'm sorry. And thirdly, at least once every day, tell each other that you love each other. That's the three main things that'll keep your marriage on track.
Okay, well, all of you listeners out there, remember that. Well, thank you, Papa, also known as Bob Fadley, for taking the time to be interviewed today on KDNK's Andy Zenka Youth Empowerment Program's Public Affairs Show. This is Mountain Maze, Bob's great-grandson, signing off today. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this extra special interview with my great-grandfather. Cool. Anything else?
That's it.
All right.
This is Mountain Maze. You have been listening to the Andy Zenka Youth Empowerment Program, where I have been having an interview with my great-grandfather, Bob. Thank you for listening to KDNK, and have a wonderful afternoon.